Welcome to the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast. I'm John, Father John Deere, and today I'm speaking with my friend Michelle Dunn, director of the Franciscan Action Network. This is a project of www.beatitudecenter.org, where you can find many other podcasts and regular Zoom programs on the nonviolence of Jesus and practicing nonviolence and working for a more just, more nonviolent world. So I always like to begin with a little prayer, so I invite you, wherever you are, just to take a deep breath and just to relax and recenter yourself, and let's all enter again into the presence of the God of peace, who loves you infinitely and personally, and everyone too. And let's welcome the risen nonviolent Jesus here with us. Just take a moment to ask for whatever graces you need to follow the nonviolent Jesus more faithfully and to do God's will. Beloved God of peace, thank you for all the many blessings of life and love and peace that you give us. Be with us now as we reflect together on your call to follow the nonviolent Jesus and to work for a more nonviolent, more just, more peaceful world. Bless us, inspire us, disarm us, strengthen us, and send us out to do your will and to do our part to help end poverty, racism, greed, injustice, warfare, nuclear weapons, and environmental destruction, that we might be your beatitude people, your holy peacemakers, and welcome your reign of universal love, universal compassion, universal peace on earth. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Well, it's a pleasure to welcome today my friend Michelle Dunn, director of the Franciscan Action Network. Michelle is a professed secular Franciscan who has had a long career as a diplomat in the Middle East and then a scholarly researcher focused on the Middle East and U.S. foreign policy. From 2006 until 2021, she headed programs focused on peace, human rights, and democracy in the Middle East at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and the Atlantic Council. You probably have heard her before with her many commentaries over the years on NPR's All Things Considered. Before that, she served for nearly 20 years in the U.S. State Department, including assignments in Jerusalem and Cairo. She holds a PhD from Georgetown University and lives in Washington, D.C. with her husband, Charles. And you might check out the Franciscan Action Network at franciscanaction.org. So, Michelle Dunn, welcome to the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast.
Thank you so much, John. I'm really honored that you invited me.
Great to have you. So, let's start a little bit with your own journey first into the Franciscan way of life and vision. So, maybe you could explain to folks what a secular Franciscan is, and maybe a bit of when and why you became one. And you've had this extraordinary career abroad and speaking on, you know, peace issues in the Middle East. And how did being a secular Franciscan fit into all of that?
Well, yes, what a long, strange trip it's been.
Yeah.
During his lifetime, St. Francis of Assisi, you know, 800 years ago, established three religious orders. One was for friars, and one, which was really established by St. Clare, was for women. And then, you know, St. Francis started finding that there were a lot of people who didn't necessarily want to become a friar or a sister, but they wanted to follow the Franciscan way of life. So he formed what's known as the Third Order for lay people, you know, people who might be single or married, but were not going to be living in a religious community. So he started that during his lifetime. And, you know, nowadays we call it the Secular Franciscan Order. It's a worldwide religious order. It's got like 200,000 people worldwide, about 11,000 of us in the United States. And so how did I end up in this? You know, John, it came to me in a very mysterious way. It's still a mystery to me how this happened, but it happened at a time of crisis in my life in about 2013. And I felt this very strong and very specific calling to join one of the lay orders of the church, something I had never thought about doing, and specifically the Franciscans. So, you know, I needed something at that point in my life. So I just followed this call kind of blindly. And I quickly saw that what this was about for me, because I didn't know anything about St. Francis. What this was about for me was looking at finding a pathway that was about humility, simplicity, poverty. It was an antidote to everything that kind of had become complicated in my life. I think about becoming a little too involved with power and money and things like that in the international space. So that's why I joined that order, and it opened up for me one door after another. You know, God just kind of has led me along from there and given me one opportunity after another that, and many of them related to this Franciscan path.
Wow, that's so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. So after all that, you ended up becoming the director of the Franciscan Action Network, which is really exciting, and one of the national, I guess Catholic, but maybe it's ecumenical, I don't know, organizations in the whole country, like Pax Christi. So tell us about that. What does it do, and what have you been working on, and where are you going with it?
Yeah, so the Franciscan Action Network, it was formed initially in 2008 by all kinds of different Franciscan religious communities. They wanted there to be a collective Franciscan voice on public policy issues, especially issues related to peace, justice, creation, and things like that. So it's funny because after I became a secular Franciscan, I found out about Franciscan Action Network, or FAN, as we call it. And I became part of the FAN grassroots, and I was part of the FAN grassroots. And FAN was really helping me to find a way to express my Franciscanism in, you know, on the issues that I cared about, right? So, you know, there's a thing, by the way, one of the aspects of Franciscanism that I found very appealing is it's a life of prayer and action, not one or the other. It has to be both. And in fact, there's a thing in the rule of the secular Franciscans. We have a rule, just like all religious communities. It says that we're supposed to go from gospel to life and life to gospel, back and forth. So prayer and action, prayer. And so I was part of the grassroots of this organization, and I kept feeling this call to join the staff of the organization. And honestly, I fought it for a couple of years because I had this pretty long and well-established career in international affairs that I cared about a lot. But, you know, I think this was God's will for me to make a change. And I remember, John, by the way, you were one of the people whose advice I asked about this at the time. And you said, 100%, do it. Go to FAN. And so, you know, what we're doing at FAN is, yes, we're articulating that collective Franciscan voice. We've got 50 religious communities and about 17,000 individual members across the country, and we form these small groups called Franciscan Justice Circles. We have 30 of them right now in 23 states. And I find it a very exciting work to be connecting with people. I'm like, how can we take loving action in the world that's rooted in the gospel, rooted in the Franciscan tradition established for us by Francis and Claire, and yet speaking to the issues of our time? that's, you know, that's really the work of FAN.
That's wonderful. What are you working on right now? Like, you can give me any kind of examples, or campaigns or projects, or what is it? What's it, you know,
What well, I mean, doing? There's...
Or is there,
mean,
you're, look, you're dealing with everything, all the issues?
Yes, the advocacy. Well, I would say, you know, right now the main constellation of issues we deal with are justice issues. I mean, that can be related to, for example, immigration and the treatment of migrants and refugees, you know, in the United States. It can be related to poverty, economic injustice, racial injustice. We work a lot on teaching nonviolence and trying, you know, advocate for the United States to play a peaceful role in the world. And we worked a lot on even on democracy issues the last couple of years. And that's related for us to nonviolence, because if we want to resolve issues nonviolently in the United States, democracy is our way to do it, right? Because otherwise, if we don't have that, then things will be resolved by coercion and domination. So those are some issues we deal with. And, you know, everything from, like, recently, of course, you know, the Congress passed this big bad spending bill, and President Trump signed it into law. But we were very involved in advocacy around that. And although, you know, ultimately things didn't go the way we had hoped they would, I do think it made a difference. There was a tremendous amount of advocacy that went on that tried to, you know, trim some of the worst aspects out of the bill, and then also just raised public consciousness about what is in this bill and how is it going to affect all of our lives going forward.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful. Thank you for that great work. So, I mean, I can imagine, but I want to hear you now as the leader of the Franciscan Action Network. Share a bit with us about the Franciscan perspective or understanding or vision on justice, peace, and nonviolence these days? And what would be unique about a Franciscan approach? Or maybe it's all the same. I don't know. You tell me.
Well, there are a couple of things that I think are special, you know, about Franciscanism and what it contributes to these issues. One of them is that St. Francis himself had a really clear understanding about the connection between possessions and privilege on one hand and violence on the other hand. You know, Francis, as you know very well, John, just absolutely refused to be involved with money or with owning anything, with owning property or possessions. And he said very clearly, he said to, you know, his early followers, we're not going to have possessions, we're not going to have property, because ultimately we would need to use violence to defend them. So he understood, you know, that if we cling to possessions or privileges, it's going to end up in either our using violence directly or maybe approving of others using violence on our behalf to defend, you know, what is not necessarily rightfully ours in the sense of the, you know, the justice of God's creation and how, you know, all needs should be met. So I think that is very clear. That really changed things for me, thinking about that, about inequity and how it leads to violence. And then the other thing I would say that I think is special about Franciscanism is Francis had an incredible sense of kinship with all of humanity, and what's even more unusual is all of creation, the way he saw a relationship not of human dominion over the rest of creation, but of humans as part of and brothers and sisters to all of creation. You know his famous canticle, and this year is the 800th anniversary of the writing of St. Francis' Canticle of, sometimes called Canticle of the Sun or Canticle of the Creatures, about brother sun, sister moon, brother wind, sister water, in which he talks about all of creation and being in that kind of kinship. It's just a radically different understanding than I was raised with, and I think most of us were raised with, about what's humanity's relationship to creation.
It's so spectacular because here we are dealing with the collapse of democracy and global poverty and permanent warfare, but catastrophic climate change because of our lack of making the connections, not just with one another, but creation, whereas he saw all of that 800 years ago.
Yes, and it was very unusual at his time too, I think. Very unusual and special. And we've got this broken relationship with creation, you know, between humanity and creation, which we see clearly in climate change. And this is the thing that I found, you know, Francis's understanding of kinship and trying to come around to understanding that on some deep level, accepting it, think what does it mean to practice kinship? I'm not saying it's necessarily the only way to look at it, but I think it's a very special contribution to where we are in the world right now.
Beautiful. Well, you and I have talked over the years a lot about Jesus and nonviolence. And so I wanted to ask you what you're thinking about nonviolence and the nonviolent Jesus these days, and what do you share with folks, and where maybe are your the challenges or struggles, you know, because that's also helpful to hear. Anything you want to share about the nonviolent Jesus, because this is the Nonviolent Jesus podcast.
John, I'm thinking back to what was for me a very important conversation that you and I had one day. I believe, if I have the dates right, it was December of 2019. And you had invited me to go to a climate protest by Jane Fonda.
Oh, it's all coming back now.
It's all coming. You remember how cold it was that day?
Did you get arrested?
Yes, and so did you.
So this was the Fire Drill Fridays, just before the pandemic, and Jane Fonda got 150 people arrested every Friday, and I called Michelle and said, "We're getting arrested." Okay, that's right. Tell us about that.
And we did that, and we were on our way. It was a brutally cold day, and as I recall, I remember you making fun of me for wearing long underwear. But anyway, that's okay.
I apologize. I'm still working on my nonviolence.
It was a brutally cold day, and we were walking to the protest, and I said I made some sort of a lame little joke about offering up our suffering or taking up the cross or something like that because of how cold it was going to be while we were going to be standing out there. And you stopped and turned and looked at me and said, "Michelle, that's not what Jesus was talking about at all."
Offering it up. You were saying, "I'm offering it up."
The offering it up, right. And that taking up your cross, it's not about sort of your everyday, it's cold outside and I'm going to be out here for a few hours. But you suggested that I, you know, go back and read those passages in the gospel. I think it's in all three synoptic gospels. You're the expert.
Yeah, it is.
That story where Jesus says, you know, if anyone wants to follow me, you know, you have to take up your cross. And what you really showed me was that there are many aspects to the nonviolence of Jesus, and many of them are gentle and loving. But what he really gets down to it here, it's about courage, you know, and it's about sacrifice, and being willing to sacrifice my own, at a minimum, my own convenience, my own comfort. You know, I often say that like advocacy and certainly activism and protest, it doesn't really fit into anybody's schedule. You know, it's something that right. you have to make a decision to do. You have to make some sacrifices. And of course, some people make very large sacrifices in order to, you know, follow Jesus and to speak up, right? And to speak up for justice and peace and so forth. And so I think about that a lot. I think that is something that it really only started coming into view for me, you know, about that time, right? 10 years or less than 10 years ago for me, starting to say, well, wait a minute, you know, am I serious about following Jesus? And if so, this is going to require some hard things. And, you know, I have to be ready for that.
That's so helpful. Thank you. Just to unpack it a little bit more, because I ended up writing about our conversation in a foreword later to a book by my friend Art Laffin called The Risk of the Cross, who has also been on the podcast. And the way I heard you say, well, I'll offer it all up, and isn't that what we have to do anyway? It's cold. And you'll have to forgive me because I get in my high horse and start preaching. And there, once you get me in a protest, well, then all bets are off. And we were walking to get arrested. We were going to shut down the Senate office building to demand action to stop the use of fossil fuels. And Jane Fonda and Reverend Barber and Roshi Joan Halifax and many other friends got arrested, and we spent a long, cold day in a kind of a jail. But it was exhilarating, and I'd love you to say a little bit more about it. But my thing is, having tried to, and I want to know what you think about this, so is that having talked so much about nonviolence throughout my life and to all kinds of groups, and so many Christians were just so clueless, but I'm thinking about the Buddhists, who are worlds ahead of us in so many ways, who can be sitting and meditating. Like, I've spoken to hundreds of Buddhists, and I talk about nonviolence and say, okay, therefore we have to be against the U.S. wars here in Iraq, Afghanistan, and building nuclear weapons in Palestine. And the whole place erupts. And then I find that some of them have guns, and a few are working at Los Alamos building nuclear weapons. That nonviolence was a very personal thing. And Jesus turns and marches to Jerusalem. That's what I was trying to talk about with you. Like Gandhi on the Salt March and Dr. King from Selma to Montgomery, or the Poor People's Campaign. And he's going to do civil disobedience, and they're going to kill him. And he's saying, this is nonviolence. Now we're in an empire much bigger and worse than anything the Roman Empire ever did, in my opinion. Headed toward destroying the planet, so even beyond the Nazis. And that conversation was important for me because I'm thinking we all have to, like, define the cross as nonviolent resistance to the empire. There was a great scripture scholar, the great founding one on the nonviolent Jesus, who had a devastating sentence he wrote in 1965. The cross is not a hangnail or a flat tire or I'm dealing with a difficult in-law. The cross is nonviolent resistance to the empire. And I remember putting the book down. I read that in 1982 and going, holy Toledo. And that's what you triggered in me. How do you, inspire people to that? And now that you're unpacking that, and you're the head of the Franciscan Action Network, basically you're trying to call people, good people, who are already interested in St. Francis and St. Clair, and therefore the nonviolent Jesus, to say, well, this doesn't mean just having to put up with the cold weather, or not to complain about it, and your personal problems, because we're all got issues and problems. But together, we're marching to Washington, D.C. to stop this culture of war and injustice.
Yeah, I mean, one thing, John, is partly because of my own journey. I realize, like, we're all on our own journeys, and we have to be patient with other people and where they are on theirs. So, like, look back at me. You mentioned, yeah, I worked for the U.S. State Department for 20 years. Okay, I was a diplomat and I was working on Middle East peace. But I look back on it now, John, and I realize I was so much part of the empire and so much part of, you know, a diplomatic apparatus that works very closely with the military, that approves of the use of force, that approves of economic exploitation, and even the diplomatic processes that I myself worked on, for example, Israeli-Palestinian negotiations, were completely unjust, right? And were unjust. And I, you know, I don't feel good about it looking back on it, right? Wow, so that's where I was, okay? And thinking myself full of good intentions and wanting to make peace in the world. And I was part of all of that, right? And then somehow, you know, God kind of woke me up, you know, and then I had a period, as you mentioned, kind of like doing scholarship and stuff, but even still, even in a think tank, you're still part of the big system in some ways, right? And there's so many issues, as I said, of money, power, et cetera. And then, and even then coming out of that and becoming a Franciscan, and then kind of a long period of trying to learn that spirituality and develop a real life of prayer and so forth. So, you know, it's taken me a long, long time. It took me many, many years to get to the point where, you know, I would even consider going to a protest, and then eventually consider, you know, participating in civil disobedience and things like that. And then there are, you know, there are many people, including yourself, who've been far more courageous and far more bold about that than I have been. So look, it, you know, and so now when I meet people, and I do meet people in our Franciscan justice circles and in our network and so forth, and, you know, I'm trying to just be totally accepting and understanding that people are at all different points. You know, it's not even a linear journey. I'm making it sound linear, but they're at all different places in their spiritual journey. And that, you know, at FAN, we're trying to be there for them to provide kind of the spiritual underpinnings for taking loving nonviolent action in the world, and then also to provide the opportunities, but never to push. You know, because, you know, some people are called to different things. Not everybody is called to the same thing. And certainly everybody is not called to the same thing at the same time.
That is so beautiful, Michelle. Thank you so much. And of course, you're right. Love is patient. Love is kind. And now I'm a cranky old activist, and patience and kindness aren't my strong point. After being at this for 400 years or whatever it seems. But so, well, that's really lovely.
You've been patient and kind with me.
Well,
for sure.
It's helpful.
So I'm going to disagree with you.
You got to say a word about that great day. And I think what Jane Fonda and friends at Greenpeace did was a kind of a Jesus campaign. Like, they're going to march into the White House and Congress every Friday and shut the government down in really meticulous nonviolence. But just give us a word what that day was like for you.
Oh, well, you used the word exhilarating, and it was that way for me too. I do think that I find participating in nonviolent actions and, you know, occasionally in civil disobedience, for me, it's a deeply spiritual experience. It's almost, I would describe it as contemplative in a way. And then there is the exhilaration of being with other people in solidarity with other people, and you're all, you know, believing in something and doing something really unusual, you know, and taking a risk together. So that is, you know, exciting and exhilarating. You know, recently I was participating in one of the big No Kings protests. And I was talking to a friend about it a few days later, and he said, well, I, you know, why did you even do that? What difference does that make? That didn't change anything that, you know, Trump or anybody else is going to do. And I said to him, yeah, that might be true. I said, but I think it changed a lot of the people who participated in the actions. So, you know, that's part of it, is like participating in these actions and finding others who are willing to, and maybe even finding others who are bolder and willing to take more risk and more creative and so forth than you are. I mean, it encourages people. It encourages me, I know, to, you know, to keep going. So, and to, you know, keep open to that. I mentioned before, like sort of God, you know, putting doors in front of me and saying, well, what do you think? Would you like to walk through this door? And a lot of things that I've done in activism in recent years have been like that. And I think that, you know, once you go through one door of activism and protest and so forth, you start contemplating other doors. And so, you know, and that leads, of course, to a broadening and strengthening movement.
Oh, that is so wonderful, Michelle. I love listening to you. You know, it reminds me of, you know, I'm pressing, you know, when I was a dopey kid and pressing my teacher, Daniel Berrigan, and he says nonchalantly, you only got enough light for the next step. Which is just like something mm-hmm. Buddha would say. Mm-hmm. And thinking, hearing you about No Kings, my older brother and his wife, can you imagine the poor guy having to have me as his younger brother? He's never been to a protest in his whole life.
He figures that's your department.
He and his wife, my sister-in-law, Karen, went to the No Kings protests, and they were ecstatic. It was mm-hmm. they were so happy, and then they met all these people, and then it was in their town, and that's the point. And that was the Fire Drill Fridays. It really creates community, and there's joy if you do it like really nonviolently for a just cause. And this was everything that Gandhi went through and Dr. King went through, and we experienced it there, and we all can have moments in the movement if we go in that right mind of peace, love, and nonviolence, because that's where I think it gets Pentecostal, and it's like a chapter in the Acts of the Apostles. And yes. You're telling me that. So let me ask you now that I grew up in D.C., you're there in D.C., working in the belly of the beast in the empire. What keeps you going in these times under the Trump administration, living and working there? And I know you must be real busy running the national organization, and also being there, you get connected with all the issues and all the many other great nonprofits and good people trying to struggle for various justice issues. So what's that like, and what keeps you going there?
You know, it's funny that you just mentioned, you know, what Daniel Berrigan said about only enough light for the next step, because what's going on right now in our country, in the world, but and even specifically here in Washington, D.C., it is way too much, okay? It's way too much to bear. I mean, just to you know, on top of all the massive global issues with, you know, the earth on fire and wars, and then what's going on inside our country and threats to our democracy and everything like that. Just here locally in Washington, D.C., for example, we're going into a very serious economic recession because of all these cuts to the government budget and everything. So there's all kinds of layers to this. It's way too much. But to get back to the Berrigan quote, what has been keeping me going is, first of all, a sense of purpose at FAN. Like, we need to be there for people right now, right? We are needed, right? And our work is needed. And in fact, the organization is growing. Our Franciscan justice circles are multiplying rapidly because people need something to do. So we're very busy. And the way I approach it is, I can't take it all in at once. And so I'm really just focused on doing the next right thing. I feel sometimes as though, you know, when you're hiking through the woods on a trail and then you see a blaze painted on a tree. And very often I find I can only see one blaze at a time. And then I go there to that tree. And once I'm there, I look around and then I can see where the next blaze is, where I need to go next.
What's that word that you're using? Blaze?
Blaze. Yeah. You know, like it's called a blaze on a hiking trail.
No, I don't know what that is. What is that? You mean a little arrow painted on a tree?
Usually it's like a little paint on a tree or something.
And that means the Appalachian Trail is that way.
Yeah, that's right.
And you look out for those signs.
I'm looking for that sign. You know, what is the next right thing? And that is like what is God's will for me and what is mine to do? You know, St. Francis said this incredibly beautiful and I think liberating thing. When he was just about to die, he said, "I've done what was mine to do. May Christ show you what is yours." In other words, don't copy me. Do what is yours to do. And so that's every day now. That's every step. What is mine to do? What's the next thing? And just follow that. And then when I get there, and I trust that when I get there and look around, then I'll see what's the next right thing after that that God is pointing me to. That's how I keep going at this point without getting overwhelmed by all the bad things that are happening and how largely powerless we are to stop or reverse them.
Oh, Michelle, that's so beautiful. And I think we have talked about that. As you know, that's what my next forthcoming book is about, surrendering and trying to do the will of God as the path. I'm moved to hear you.
I can't wait to read that.
Well, we'll see, but I'm trying to figure it out myself. But so you're experiencing that in your personal life, and it's kind of liberating, but you've also stepped up to the plate to offer leadership in the church, which is very exciting. And so thank you for doing that, to help guide more of us together to do the next right thing together, which is what I think Jesus wanted. So Jesus calls us individually, but also communally too. And you're trying to, I suppose, guide all the thousands of good Franciscan folk.
Well, I mean, I'm not the leader of all the Franciscans, but what we do say at FAN, you know, is that we are trying to build an intergenerational Franciscan movement for justice, peace, creation, and human dignity, right? So movement, yeah.
Well, we're really at the end of our time. Is there any, and we'll have to keep talking, but is there anything you'd like to add before we end for our listeners?
I really hope, all the listeners, and I'm one of your loyal listeners, understand how much, you are all needed and wanted in movements like the Franciscan movement. And I'm thinking of our mutual friend, Brian McLaren, John, and how he says, you can't control what happens in this world, but you can control how you show up for it. So we all need to show up and find what's ours to do and do it, in community with others within movements. And people are so welcome to join the Franciscan movement. Just find us. We're at franciscanaction.org, and we will connect you to a justice circle near you if you'd like to be part of this movement.
Amen. That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Michelle Dunn, for speaking with me today. And thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast. You can hear other podcasts and find other upcoming Zoom programs at www.beatitudecenter.org. And please consider offering a donation to support this free work. It's all for free. And if you can, give us some positive feedback or review on Apple or Spotify or whatever platform you use, or if you get us through the National Catholic Reporter. And please tell your friends and colleagues and church workers about this podcast. That's probably the best way to help it spread through word of mouth. So may the God of peace bless us all and keep on following the nonviolent Jesus, everyone. And see you next time.